go to our last discussion of today, which is accounting policies and accounting estimates, and I give the floor to Nadia.
Good afternoon, everyone. In this session, we're going to talk about accounting policies and accounting estimates. And first, I will provide you with a quick reminder about the history of this project. The board added this narrow scope amendment project to its agenda following a request from ESMA. The board then went ahead and drafted the amendments. The amendments aimed to clarify the existing concepts in IS 8. Before publishing the exposure draft, staff consulted ASAF members and EU about whether the proposed amendments constitute sufficient improvement for the board to go ahead and publish the exposure draft. At the time, nearly all ASAF members said that the proposed amendments constituted sufficient improvement. So following that discussion, the board published the exposure draft in September 2017. The board discussed the feedback summary. We received comment letters, obviously, since September 2017. The board discussed the feedback summary of comments on the exposure draft last month in March 2018. As the next step, the board will decide on the future direction of this project, which brings us to our discussion today. Before the board will decide on the future direction of this project, we would like to get your input about on certain aspects of this project. As you can see from the feedback summary, there has been a lot of support for the proposed amendments. Nevertheless, some constituents raised many additional comments and questions, the most common comment being about illustrative examples. In order to get a better understanding of what constituents want the board to do, we would like to ask ASAF members two questions today. Is it feasible to provide illustrative examples to the proposed amendments? Question number one. And question number two, which is not in the paper, I have to add, is do ASAF members continue to believe that the proposed amendments constitute sufficient improvement for the board to finalize the amendments? Before we start this discussion, I would like to add a couple of personal things on a personal note. I believe, personally, because I'm project manager of this project, that the value of these proposals lies in the definition of accounting estimates and in explaining to the world the relationship between accounting policies and accounting estimates. This explanation has clicked with many people and is reflected in comment letters. I also think that by raising too many additional questions, the constituents might risk, and I use the English expression, throwing away the baby with the bathwater. I hope you're familiar with the expression and the message I'm trying to convey. As I said, the book...
I'm trying my best not to do so.
Please try. As I said, originally the board undertook this project as a narrow scope amendment. It didn't intend it to be a very big project or a rewrite of IS 8. With all this being said, we will start our discussion with questions in paper 4, page 5, about illustrative examples. Once we discuss the question about illustrative examples, we will then come back to the bigger question about proceeding with the amendments by the board. So I'm opening the discussion, as I said, with questions on page 5 or agenda paper 4.
Among 12 6, OSS members will receive comments from four member jurisdictions. I will summarize the comments received. So regarding feasibility of providing illustrative examples, members showed mixed views. So one member thought that providing example is difficult because defining accounting policies from accounting estimate is so entity-specific and based on specific facts. And one member thought that providing example is feasible because the ISP provides a specific pattern for each example and knows that the example does not necessarily apply to other cases. So meanwhile, both members thought that the example provided by the ISP staff is helpful because it logically shows that the relationship between accounting policy and accounting estimate. And regarding next step of this project, the one member suggested that the ISP should decide whether to finish this project as a narrow scope amendment or to review IS 8 comprehensively. Because many concerns and requests to clarify many issues relating to ISA still exist, according to the feedback, They also suggested that the ISB consider relationship and consistency between the conceptual notion of uncertainty in the new conceptual framework and the meaning of estimation uncertainty and definition of accounting estimate in ISA.
Thank you. Thank you.
Kimberly?
So we got some feedback around this in terms of the providing additional examples. I mean, most people, as you can imagine, say yes, it's always helpful to have additional examples, but also recognise the difficulty in doing that. In terms of the suggested example that you've got, there was some feedback that people found that helpful, particularly illustrating the thought process. But we also got some, I guess, more lukewarm feedback, you might say. There wasn't any negative, but there was some in the lukewarm category that said, well, maybe it's helpful, maybe it's not, and were pretty relaxed whether you went ahead or not with that. Probably the only other additional comment, and this is more of a personal comment rather than anything that's come out of feedback, and it's something that might have come up in the consultation phase, so apologies if I'm raising something that's already been considered and is not an issue, but when I was actually thinking about, well, if you have an example of what was a change in accounting policy as opposed to a change in accounting estimate, one example came to mind was under IS1, if you went from a current, non-current presentation in the balance sheet to a presentation based on liquidity, then IS1 tells you that you've got to apply IS8 requirements around a change in accounting policy to determine, you know, if it's more relevant form of presentation. That made me wonder where you were suggesting the changing the definition of accounting policies to refer to measurement basis rather than basis more broadly. Would that potentially create a conflict with the requirements in IS1? So again, that's probably something that's already come up and you've already thought about it, but I just thought I'd mention. So that was all I wanted to say.
Andreas.
Thanks, Hans. So if I take your question literally, do I consider it feasible to provide illustrative examples? Well, surely. I mean, if you as a standard setter don't know how to explain your own statements, I mean, it would be really, bad testimony. I think the call really came from ESMA with a few distinct examples where they said the line is blurring in terms of accounting policies versus accounting estimates. And I think if you picked up those, where obviously there is some missing clarity in the standard, it would be certainly helpful. The problem that I always see with illustrative examples and with many of the examples that I see in the current standards is either they are too naive, and forgive me for that derogatory term, but they are too simplistic in order to meet the situations that practice is encountering. Secondly, I think if you expand on them and make them more fact-specific, then you might end up in a similar camp as the IFRIC currently on their IFRS 15 cases, where people then try to analogize to the illustrative examples and not really to the principles. And that's probably the downside risk that you face. But I think it's in the end, it's a cost-benefit approach. I see merit in that because I think the current literature is not as clear as we think it is. Therefore, my advice would be, yes, try to provide examples and start with those that Esma mentioned in their original submission.
Can I follow up on that, though? Because I think it's particularly difficult, actually, to produce useful examples in this case. It's not like a normal standard where you've got some recognition requirement or measurement requirement, but what you're trying to talk about is the distinction between an accounting policy and an accounting estimate. And the problem is that, in a way, the most obvious examples of accounting policies are where you switch from doing something that's within a standard to something that's outside a standard or vice versa. And that, of course, is going to be a useless example because people already know what to do because the standard's already telling them what to do. So then you try to look for something that's either within a standard but not covered specifically, which means you have to sort of create the unknown and look for the unknown and find something that's not there. Or you come to something that's very situation-dependent or very dependent on particular circumstances in the particular standard. So we've got the dreadful FIFO case, for example. Or some of the IS-19 discount rate stuff, which depends very much on the particular facts of the way that standard happens to be written and makes those examples absolutely useless to generalise to anything else. And so I think for this standard, it's particularly difficult to come up with useful examples and facts other than ones that would just restate the obvious. So it would be really helpful to us if you could indicate whether you think it's going to be feasible for us to come up with examples that will actually be useful rather than making people feel good.
But to pick up on your point, I think the paper acknowledges that we have thought about providing specific illustrative examples, and like as Peter explained, we believe it's incredibly difficult or not very useful. But what did you think about the approach in the sub-paper? You know, when we picked up on something that's not too controversial, but we tried to explain the thought process about how accounting policies and accounting estimates relate to each other. Do you find this approach helpful?
Well, I think it certainly helps. And I mean, back to Peter's point, yes, it is difficult, but I think it's not artificial because these are exactly the practical problems that people have to live with. So one way of dealing with that might be actually to put a variation on an example. So you start with a base case, explain the logic, for instance, in the way that you outline it, and then you put a certain modification to it to demonstrate where potentially it would flip and jump over the cliff, because that would really be helpful.
Mary?
Just following up really on Peter's comments, I think one of the things, I guess my take, and maybe I'm having a particularly blunt American moment, is we can either say, here's a list of questions people have in practice. Let me give you an answer in the form of an example. So we're going to give fact-specific guidance, pretending it's an example, when it's just a, if this is your question, here's the answer. Or, because I think we've really struggled to come up, the staff has developed an example of the thinking, the process, which is what's in this paper. But as Peter said, the ones that are the questions that are causing the problems are more a product of the standard that produces, the question than they are of the concept. And we keep talking about wanting to have principle-based standards. And, if this is enough of a practice issue that we think we should, your advice to us is just answer it, then give it to us as that advice rather than saying add examples as kind of the air cover.
Well, we're one of the commenters that suggested that you should develop some additional examples or consider it to try and add clarity. Yeah, and to put that into context, I think our overall view on the proposed amendment was that it was directionally helpful, and I think in particular, Nadia, for the reasons you mentioned in clarifying the nature of accounting estimates, and that the process to derive the estimate is part of the estimate in effect. But we acknowledge that wasn't going to achieve 100% clarity in every case, and that's fine. Probably the only way, if that could ever be done, it would probably require a much broader exercise. And in the underlying issue really is the circumstances in which retrospective restatement is more appropriate. Come at it from that angle, but in the context of a narrow scope project, we felt that this was good, even if it was going to leave various grey areas, but perhaps some examples of this style, which are trying to help people with the thought process, could reduce the amount of greyness while still being somewhat grey. There were some people in our group who would preferred the sort of list of bullet points, here are examples of changes in estimates, here are examples of changes in accounting policies, but that does sound like you're trying to sort of overlay a principle-based approach with a selection of a sample of rules, and overall that doesn't seem like a very sensible way to go. On the detail of the example, just a couple of detail points, I know that it's sort of structured trying to say here's the accounting policy and here are the estimates, but then the part dealing with estimates seems to actually then start describing part of the accounting policy. And it doesn't actually kind of link what's a policy and what's an estimate back to the language in the exposure draft. So in helping people apply those words, then I'd suggest it could do so.
Cédric.
Thank you, Hans. When we discussed the comment we wanted to make on this consultation, many people expressed that they were not in favor of having examples because of what Andreas previously said, that it would lead to rules rather than, or it could be used as a rule and a restrictive rule rather than use the principle. However, this example does not provide any ambiguity that could be a matter of interpretation and bringing some rules. So it's not really an issue, but we are not sure that it really helps in distinguishing between an estimate and a policy.
So you're talking about the illustrative example in the paper, or amendments in general?
No, I think this example is specific.
Thank you.
But once again, I think it's the amendment as it has been written helps really in identifying the differences between a policy and an estimate. There are some other issues which are discussed currently in the new amendment on IS-8 regarding the agenda decision and so on. So. And there are some issues remaining, which are the difference between an error and a change in estimates. As long as those questions have not been discussed, maybe it makes sense to wait before finalizing the amendments on IS-8. That's the way we're going.
Speak up on this point before. Moving on, because just timing seems to be right. Assuming, like, these amendments go through and, you know, the board will agree and the SAF members will support, the intention would be to amend IS-8 as a bunch, like, you know, agenda decisions, a definition of material, and accounting policies, accounting estimates definition. So because all three projects relate to the same standard, so assuming all of them go through, it would make perfect sense to bunch them together, which means probably that with this project, there will be a little bit of a time gap from our discussion today, let's say, and finalizing the amendments. But we thought it would be worthwhile doing that together, nevertheless, just to explain the process.
Perfect.
So it's not a technical discussion as such. Because that's what many people told us in the past, including standards that are TASAF members, that you know, it's easier for implementation and processing.
Linda?
So I have empathy for the dilemma. And I think that no matter what you do, someone will say, well, you didn't give me an example that relates to my problem, and so I get it. And I recall very shortly after I took the job as chair, we were trying to do a very simple thing in a standard for our private enterprises, where we were trying to fix a decision tree that was in the standard. It took us two years of pain and agony, and so I have empathy. That said, I think what you might want to do when you're thinking about it is don't overcomplicate it and figure out who your target audience is, because, frankly, big companies can do this. But in Canada, that's like less than 10% of the companies, and the 90% are the ones struggling with this. And so, Peter, when you say it's obvious to you. It might not be obvious to your target market, so you might be overcomplicating it and overthinking about it. So it's interesting you raised about the discount issue, because back in 2015, we actually discussed that at IDG, whether it was a change in estimate or a change in accounting policy, because we were getting so many queries in. So we actually, you know, took the time to discuss it because it was an easier path forward. So all that said, the example that you have in the paper, I think, is a step forward. I think the only comment that I would make about that example is, in testing it a bit with some of the staff, the problem you have is that you get a little gray zone here because you're talking about inventory at cost, and then you're talking about methods to quantify cost. And so the notion of is it an accounting cost or an accounting estimate, and you're using this one, not sure that that doesn't but help. That I'm not sure that helps. I think it might still complicate the issue, so I just offer that. But if you want help, what you should do is assign each homework, and we should give you an example.
You know, send you a comment letter.
Yeah. So you should, we're standard setters. I think we should be able to do this. I think it's helpful to the broader audience, but I'd sign up for it, okay? So there you go.
Any other volunteers? Oh, yes. No.
In our view, the fact that people are asking for illustrative example implies that the principles and the main standards are not necessarily clear. And because those examples are just examples, we think the ISB should provide additional guidance in the main text of the standard. And in this case, we believe that a rule-based approach is acceptable. The exposure draft clarified that the change in the cost formula would be a change in an accounting policy, and we think other examples that had been controversial and discussed in the past should be clarified in the main text similarly so that everyone knows what the answer would be.
You.
Okay. Just quick response that we think it's feasible to provide examples of. But as the standard setter, we should be very careful because the conclusion in examples are sensitive to specific facts. So our suggestion is that if we can set some restrictions or assumptions on the examples, maybe we can have some conclusions that would be more helpful for the people. If it's not feasible, I think the paragraph 14 said that the thought process would be of some help.
So in this sense, more specifically, did you like the example on the paper? Or, because it did aim to explain the thought process. What were your reactions?
I think I'll just take this example. I think it's okay because it provides the thought process. But maybe in some cases, you can set some restrictions or assumptions on some specific examples. Then maybe you can get the conclusions. That would be helpful to the reader.
Okay, I'll try to summarize this discussion. Okay, I think there are two parts of this discussion, and please correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't get it quite right. I think the discussion about specific examples for specific fact patterns, I think the general feeling is that it's not that feasible, and it's very difficult. As a standard setter, so you realize and appreciate the challenge. I also think Mary made a good point, and some of you repeated that point, that if specific fact patterns are not clear and that they are that important for constituents, that maybe the constituents should raise those specific points with, let's say, IFRIC or the board or via different channels. Having said that, that wasn't the purpose of this project. As I said, we try to address the issue in a principle-based way. So this is the first half. Then the second half of it, this is the specific-based kind of examples and issues. That in terms of the illustrative example that we try to develop in the staff paper, which would illustrate the thought process as opposed to addressing specific fact patterns, again, I don't hear much enthusiasm, let's put it this way. So, it's kind of warmish. Yeah, you say, yeah, let's step in the right direction. We kind of see what you're trying to achieve. Can be improved, but I don't feel again any kind of, oh yeah, you did a great job with explaining stuff and so on. So am I being fair or like, today was I a little bit too categorical on you? And my summary, is it kind of no support to the first one, not much enthusiasm for the second one? That's how I would summarize the discussion.
Do we need a note?
I think that's a fair presentation.
Okay. Thank you. Anyway.
If you're a lack of enthusiasm, I'm
It's still
input.
Constructive feedback.
For your constructive feedback, thank you so much. Thanks. Okay, on this basis, we still need to discuss the amendments overall, because we did publish the exposure draft, we received this feedback, yes, people talked about illustrative examples, we just discussed them. I think, as I said, we spoke to our sub-members before this very issue. Do you think the amendments represent sufficient improvement? And, what do you think? Do you think the board should finalize them? Or not, should the board proceed with those amendments? Let's put it this way.
Nadia, are you asking that question on the assumption that the board would be unlikely to do the detailed fact pattern?
That's correct.
And given the lukewarm response, probably not do a lot more with generic type of examples? So you're asking just about something largely as proposed?
Yeah, it's okay. That's correct, Mary. Yeah. I'm asking, what's in the exposure draft? What are your reactions about the amendments going through?
Is there a point in continuing?
Yeah.
That's what you're asking, yes. Andrew?
I'm going to try to be really enthusiastic now.
Watch this.
Film it.
Yes. We think these will certainly clarify certain matters. I'm conscious the original submission to the Interpretations Committee came from the European Securities and Markets Authority and an observer to the EFRAG board, and I think they are supportive of this direction as well. I said already it might not clarify every single fact pattern, but it will clarify things overall, and that's important. One of the challenging areas there is this word practices, which the board decided to retain in the definition because removing it might make the definition of accounting policies too narrow, which sort of implies the board's got an idea as to how wide it wants that definition to be, but hasn't explicitly said so. The word practices, just in normal common parlance, could mean just about everything that you do in preparing your financial statements. So I sort of understand why at this stage the board decided to leave that word where it is, but it's not quite clear what the board intends by doing so and what sort of narrowing might result from removing it.
Sue?
Can I comment on that? And I can see why the word practice is difficult because it's sort of so nebulous. But the sort of example that we used at the time, or I used at the time, I think to try and illustrate what we were trying to get at was, I guess some of us were concerned that the other words in there were a bit too grand for some of the situations that would arise. And one of the examples we had was, I don't know, if you're an electricity company, you may have a policy that if you replace an amount of line that's so long, I don't know what sort of number to use to make it sensible for an electricity provider, but a shortish distance of line, you may say my policy is to treat that as repairs and maintenance, whereas if I replace a long amount of line, then I'll treat that as property, plant and equipment. And those sorts of things are sort of not particularly principles.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to make it clear that that didn't automatically mean that was an estimate, because that doesn't feel like an estimate. I think it is a policy.
Mm-hmm.
But principle seems like too grand a word for something like that, which is quite a practical sort of, X metres of line is maintenance, Y metres of line is property, plant and equipment. So it was that type of thing that I at least had in mind. And I don't know what word to use other than practices to capture that sort of thing. So if you've got another suggestion, I certainly would love to hear it, because I think principle sounds too highfalutin for some of the types of things we know are going to have to be decisions made for policies.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to add to that, I can't speak for the board, but I think certainly what I was thinking of at the time was that if you looked at things in particular standards, which today we probably we'd all agree are accounting policies, if you said that it has to be a principle, people might sort of start to interrogate the standard and ask, is this part of the standard really a principle or not? If you sort of dug into the crevices of IS 19, are all those things really principles?
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't want people to go through that kind of agony, so we thought we needed something else. And we thought it's probably best to keep something that was already in the existing definition, not invent something completely new.
Wouldn't potentially the use of thought-provoking or thought-inspiring type illustrative examples help to illustrate the board's description of the word practices, whether or not using length of cable in the electricity industry?
Yeah. But that was the sort of thing we're trying to get at. So it's not just an estimate, but it's not really a principle.
No.
That's all. Thank you. Your summary of the feedback says that almost all respondents stated the proposal in this disclosure draft would provide more clarity on how accounting policy relate to accounting estimates. On this basis, I don't see why you should not proceed.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're going... I think what happened, and that's where the board got a little bit uncertain what to do, was literally when you go to the comment letter summary, and we had four questions in the exposure draft, when you go through responses, agreed, like it's overwhelming how supportive people were, like if you just look at one line of response. But then what happened, and I have to blame more sophisticated constituents as opposed to regular constituents, if there is such a distinction, I don't know. But what happened, more sophisticated constituents started raising more, like, a lot of many additional questions. Well, what about this? Why don't you also deal with accounting errors? Why don't you deal with retrospective prospective application? They started sidetracking so much and like, raising all those. That's where it's just like, oh, you said you agreed, but do you really agree? Because you asked so many additional questions. And that's where the board want this part, partly the reason why we're talking to you today, just to make sure that we interpreted comment letters correctly, like how much tension and like how should the board weigh the evidence that we received in comment letters.
Well, I'm not a sophisticated I'm a regular one.
That's why we like so much
recommend to proceed. I don't see how illustrative example would help to solve these potential questions. It's possible that after this has been finalized, the IFRIC might receive, the IFRS Interpretation Committee, sorry, might receive some questions for how to apply this, and inevitably, because in my view, very clear the draft and the final, they will reject all of this. I should.
Tim?
The examples you start getting into of when is a practice or a convention and a change in that acceptable seems perhaps different than what you're illustrating here, and I wonder if it's something you never get out of if you take it on, at least when we hear about it, things like capitalization thresholds.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that says you should expense or can expense assets over a certain or under a certain amount. And we hear questions in practice of what if my threshold for capitalization was, you know, 5,000, but I've grown as an entity and I want to raise it to 7,500. Well, it doesn't seem like it's a more precise accounting policy. Nonetheless, people do that. Do you need presumably in each of those areas, the reason people do it is because it's still in compliance in all material respects with the objective of the standard. But you start getting into that and the myriad of iterations, you know, cutoff principles. Can I have a cutoff that is, you know, 5 o'clock as of, you know, GMT, or do I have to do a cutoff as of, you know, rolling around the globe? People have practices for those things, and you start getting into you probably won't get done with this in any time soon.
So what is...
I would have said finalizing this, if this advances the ball, is probably useful to do as opposed to trying to capture some of those practices, conventions, whatever you want to call them, that people struggle with. When I change that convention, is that a change in accounting principle? Is it a change in estimate? Or is it simply, you know, one, at least in the U.S. context, one immaterial non-compliant policy to another immaterial non-compliant policy? And so in either case, do I need to, how much time do I need to think about it?
So ignore the sophisticated questions. Kimberly.
I guess in answer to your question, I was going to give you a personal comment because we didn't specifically seek feedback on that this time around. But if I reflect on some of the feedback we've had in the past in terms of the project, while I yes, we struggled to get to the highly enthusiastic category, there certainly has been positive feedback in that you know there's some issues that come up in practice where it's felt that this would help clarify. The IS2 one, although it's might be a very specific one, nevertheless it's a kind of an annoying one that does come up from time to time. So the amendments would clarify that, you know, the FIFO weighted average, and also the other one, because you're proposing with the examples to remove the word financial from changes of when you're changing how you estimate a measurement of fair value. It's another one that comes up because we often have property, plant and equipment measured at fair value, and you get questions around if I'm going from discounted cash flows to a depreciated replacement cost method, is that a change in policy or a change in estimate? So it would help answer those sort of questions. So I think all in all, it's on the helpful side of the margin, but having said that, I guess it's we're not sort of in the highly enthusiastic category. So if you decided not to proceed, I don't think people would be howling and protest either.
All right.
Any views? We had four responses.
So my comment would be that I looked at our response letter, and we're probably one of the ones you don't like. But anyway, if people said this would be helpful, it kind of falls into the category of can't hurt, might help. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think also maybe it's not a groundbreaking amendment by itself, but I thought maybe if we go ahead as a package of amendments to ISA, it would make sense, you know, so it would help out.
I think that's what you're hearing, Nadia.
Yeah. Okay, great. I'm glad I'm hearing that because that was my understanding as well. Thank you.
Doesn't hurt is already a major achievement.
Thank you for translating.
Okay. Well, as things are still the end of today.